Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Live from the corner of Broadway and Battery, this is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
It's been a fun week here on 95.7 The Game. One of the best sports weeks we've had in a while in terms of headlines, news, things to talk about. And the Warriors gave us plenty to talk about with a good win over Houston. And we talk about that with Steve Kerr, along with what's going on tomorrow in Oklahoma City, what's going on with the state of his team, the league, the NBA, some of the decisions that were just made concerning fans in Utah, an awful lot to chop it up here with Steve Kerr in just a moment. Want to remind you, please go ahead and give us a tweet to the tweets, hashtag to the tweets, because it's 6:30 tonight. Matt Kolsky, Gianna, and I are taking on any and all comers as long as you decide to do it on the Twitters. You got to use the hashtag to the tweets, and your question could be on the radio, and we'll give you a little shout-out on the air as well. A little gloss for the Twitter handle, and I believe the kids do officially like that. Steve Kerr, always phenomenal, joins us here once again on 95.7 The Game. And we say, Steve, you know, look, that was a fun game on Wednesday. It really, really was. Happiness after beating Houston. Look good, feel good, play good. It's a good formula. And you, the Warriors, should continue to do that again and again and again.
I think so. Why not?
It was fantastic. It was good. It was a nail biter. It kind of woke everybody up. I mean, I just saw a bounciness to your team. And I'm just going to say, you know, when I threw out that start Andre Iguodala suggestion, it's nice to know that you're listening to that.
Yeah, I turned on your show because I really had no idea what to do. As soon as you said that, I thought, oh, my God, he's right. So thank you for the suggestion.
Well, it's me. It's the video guy from a few years ago. You know, we're here to help, Steve. We really are.
Everybody gets credit.
All right, Steve, I don't want to get you in trouble here, and I know this is a thing. I certainly don't want to cost you any money. So I'm going to speak about my view of what I saw on Wednesday night. And basically, that is James Harden and Chris Paul doing a lot of things specifically to get foul calls and in the process being in the referee's ear the entire game. And I think as a result, getting some of those calls that I would say they didn't necessarily deserve. Meanwhile, on the other side, every night I watch a two-time MVP never complain, get bounced around the court, and seemingly not get calls. I'm curious, especially since carping at the referees has been a topic around here lately, what is a guy like Steph Curry supposed to do to get the calls that other stars in the league get, since being respectful doesn't seem to work?
First of all, I love the fact that you're coming in firing, Matt. That is awesome. I mean, no holds barred. Let's just, first question, let's fire on the officials. Let's go.
I got another one about player empowerment, if you really want to get.
Well, that's honestly, it's one of the challenges of playing Houston. You know, Paul and Harden are as good as anybody in the league at creating fouls and drawing contact. And, you know, the one that we know Chris is going to go for is at the end of every quarter, as soon as they're in the bonus, as soon as they have four fouls, if he's holding the ball and you're anywhere near him, he's just going to swipe underneath you, and it's an automatic foul. And so Alphonso McKinney was guarding him, I think, for the first time in his career the other night. And even though we warned him, you know, he still got his hand in there. Chris did the usual thing, two free throws. So it's a learning experience. It is infuriating, but it's just the way it's called. So we have to respect that and just keep playing.
Steve, I'll walk you back down the find the head coach mountain that Matt wanted to walk you up there. let me just ask about DeMarcus's big night. Was there any sort of a pregame letter rip conversation with him? Because he was razor sharp, and it looked like he just he had been given the marching orders to just, you know, when you're out there, you're running this. And if that's the absence of Durant being out there to be a playmaker, like, fill that void, be that guy. And he certainly was.
Yeah, there was no conversation at all. It was just DeMarcus going out and playing probably his best game of the year. I do think some of it had to do with Kevin's absence. You know, DeMarcus just ended up with the ball in his hands a lot more. And the way they have always guarded us, Houston, with all that switching, it made perfect sense to go in there and force some of their smaller guys to have to guard him and keep spaced around him, keep moving. And it was a different look in our rivalry with Houston. It's the first time we've ever really been able to play that style. So it was very effective. He controlled the game. And then, you know, the other stuff was the defense at the other end, the box outs. It was probably our best rebounding game that I can remember all year in terms of just never letting anybody slide in for a rebound. We boxed out every possession. It was fantastic.
Well, it's pretty amazing how the big man puts the ball on the floor, too. And he really does, whether it's a pass, sometimes a shot, a little floater off the backboard. He's got a feathery touch about him.
Beautiful touch. You know, he's a great shooter. I think this was maybe his 19th or 20th game with us. So you've got to remember it's still really early in the process, and we're still figuring out, you know, the best spots to put him in and best combinations. And we changed the rotation up for that game with Kevin's absence, and I think found some things that worked. Hopefully that'll keep going. But, you know, we have another 15 games to work with in the regular season to try to fine-tune everything. And I thought that was a really good step for us the other night.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. Was that a message sent to Houston, or is that a more important message for your own team?
Yeah, I'm not a huge believer in the whole message thing. I think it's more about taking care of your own business and how you're playing. And I think it was a really solid game where everybody locked in. You know, Draymond even said it after the game. Everybody, coaches, players, like everybody, you could feel the energy, just the attention to detail, and you know, every time out, we were everyone was locked in. So that was more than anything just a test for ourselves in terms of our own standards for our play.
All right, I'm now going to ask a personal favor, Steve, after the obnoxious first question, and that is I am a huge, huge Sean Livingston guy because he was a few years behind me in high school, and one of the things he did in high school, among many incredible things, was just dunk all over my high school a lot to the point where I was enchanted by him. Obviously, I think he's admitted, anyone can see, it hasn't been his best year. But I thought, especially after Wednesday night, when I look at the box score and I see Sean Livingston, 18 minutes, 1-for-4, 2 points, 3 assists, 1 rebound, nothing exceptional except he's plus 16. And I have seen a lot of people criticizing a down year for Sean Livingston. So I'm wondering if you can help us identify what the things he's doing that are not in the box score other than the plus 16.
Well, he made a great play, made a bunch of great plays in that game, one of which was right in front of our bench. I think it was mid-second quarter. We were on a good little run. He made a post feed. Clay took a nice cut to the basket, and Sean just kind of followed him and set a screen on Clay's man. Clay popped back out to the top of the key and made a three. So in that sequence, Sean doesn't get an assist or any points, but we get 3 points because he knows exactly what he's looking at. So Sean reminds me a lot of Andre. You know, he just knows the game so well. He feels it, he sees it. And I think the other night he had a bigger responsibility because with Kevin out, when Sean was in, he was really the primary ball handler. And so I thought it gave him a chance to be more that pure point guard that he's always been. Whereas sometimes with our team, with all the guys who are so talented, Sean plays off the ball, and you know, he's more of an on-ball point guard type, and so that game felt very comfortable for him, I thought.
Steve, is Kevon Looney your secret weapon against James Harden?
He's just a tremendous defender on the perimeter against ISO guards. I mean, he's as good as anybody in the league, and it's become a much-needed skill set in this league, given what everybody's doing. There's so many perimeter players who are going to attack, and so Loon's as good as anybody. Just staying in front, not fouling, being smart, taking away angles, and I thought he was fantastic.
Have you been huddling up extra with Ron Adams in the past couple days? Spend a little extra time looking at film with him. I know that, you know, you and Draymond obviously had the back and forth. There wasn't a back and forth. And I tell you, the fact that both of you guys put that away like the grown men that you are was just fantastic. Nonsense, nonsense, nonsense. But Ron Adams, you know, is a guy that I think is either great at hiding his frustrations at times, or he's slapping the hell out of his thighs at times. How's Ron doing?
He's fine. It's one of our favorite pastimes, is watching the game tape and just seeing Ron's reaction when the other team scores. I mean, he does like the full slump in the chair. He does the full head snap back like somebody punched him.
Like Harden.
Sometimes, like Harden. Sometimes the combination of the two, you know, head snaps back, slumps in the chair. You know, we've joked with him that we've a couple times this year we've worried that he actually died during the game. You know, we have a lot of fun with Ron and his theatrics on the sidelines when the other team scores.
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you got to get a super cut of that where you like edit in a little cartoon with a shotgun so that you could just have a series of violent Ron Adams deaths on video.
The sideline interaction that you're talking about, I want to extend that to what happened in Utah and Russell Westbrook and a Jazz fan. I thought the Jazz came down big, suspending the fan from this year that got out of line. They also saw some footage and suspended a fan from the last playoffs who got out of line. Steve, was this a big moment for the NBA, and are the Utah Jazz actually going to come out of this looking like heroes?
I don't think it was like a seminal moment, because I don't think this is very common, to be honest with you. I mean, fans are always talking trash. But it's a totally different deal, talking trash and, you know, yelling hate-filled profanity. I mean, two totally different things. And I'll be honest, in my 5 years, you know, as coach of the Warriors, I've never heard anything like that, you know, that was racially toned and bigoted and really hateful. Never anything like that. So to me, it's the exception rather than the rule. I hope I'm right on that, but I thought the Jazz handled it beautifully. Donovan Mitchell handled it really well, and hopefully we just move on and the passion doesn't get swept away in this kind of stuff. This was really ugly.
It feels like 99% of the fans never crossed that imaginary line. I look at this whole thing going down, and there's no doubt that we spotlight, we microscope things, and we bring so much attention to the negative that you'd think it outweighs the good. But like you just said, you really routinely don't hear things that make you go like, wow, that's pushing it.
No. I mean, the closest game when we were here for Kevin's first trip in Oklahoma City, and that got a little ugly, but nothing like what we heard in the Westbrook video. So that was I thought the exception, as I said, rather than the rule.
I want to dig in on one coaching thing that I've now heard you mention a couple times after the game on Wednesday and just a couple minutes ago, as far as I think the way you put it on Wednesday was Kevin being out did sort of allow you to discover something with DeMarcus and a particular way to use him. That was both A, because you have one less frequent ball handler on the floor, and I think you also said you staggered DeMarcus's minutes with Draymond. And I'm wondering, when something like that happens, do you feel like that's something that now that Kevin returns, it's instructive and you can still use those new things you've learned when Kevin's back? Or is that more a break glass in case of emergency and we don't have Durant, then we go back to that?
No, I think it's something we learned. And you know, the thing to remember, Matt, is that the last few years we've kind of played one way, which is, you know, warp speed, firing three-pointers, you know, not a whole lot of time spent. If we had a good shot, we've launched it. But now with DeMarcus, we can win a game a different way. You know, we can win with our ground game instead of throwing the ball every time, if that's the right metaphor. And even when Kevin's back, you know, if we're in a game where we feel like the shots aren't going, we're not in a good rhythm. Well, in the past, we would just keep firing. Now I think we have an option to dump the ball inside and slow things down a little bit, take advantage of a mismatch down there. So it's really, I think, another option for us in our offense.
Steve, will Durant play tomorrow?
I would say it's doubtful. You know, he's officially questionable, so I guess that's the word I should use. But
you're downgrading him.
You know, I'm downgrading him to doubtful. I just think that given the nature of the ankle, I think giving him a couple of extra days makes too much sense, especially, you know, at this stage of the season. If this were a playoff game, for sure he'd be playing. We want to be extra cautious, so I'm guessing San Antonio will be his first game back, but we'll see how he feels tomorrow. It's up to him and to Rick tomorrow after shoot-around.
I'm sure it's a game he wants to play in. Your only trip to Oklahoma City, I don't know how the scheduling wrinkle, I mean, does the NBA not understand what they gave up? I mean, there should be two games at Oklahoma City. Jeez.
Right. I don't know how that works. I would guess there's some kind of a rotating formula where, you know, the divisional teams are matching up with other divisions. But I've never actually asked them before, so I have no idea.
You're going to get a couple of back-to-backs Monday, Tuesday next week. Anyone due for a little load management?
Probably. You know, we haven't played DeMarcus in any back-to-backs this year, and I don't know that we will. I'm not sure we need to. So there's a chance he could take a rest. There's always a chance with Sean, Andre, just given their age. And assuming that Kevin is back then, you know, we'd be able to mix and match and still be able to, you know, to put out enough guys and have enough depth to help us win a game. So we'll see. I think it's something that more than likely will happen, though.
I think a lot around this team gets made of the vibe, and we're constantly questioning these sorts of things. I think probably in part because it's hard to question the basketball. But it seemed like, especially Wednesday, vibe really good, people feeling happy. And one thing we've talked about on the show is whether being out on the road, having the guys on planes and spending more time together and less distractions actually can kind of help the vibe of a team. Do you feel like that is potentially happening here?
Yeah, I do. And I think winning does that too. You know, especially a game like where, you know, we've got a team that is one of the best in the conference. You know, great playoff series last year. So you get out on the road, that's helpful. You're just spending a lot of time together. But then you win a game like that and it's sort of galvanizing and everybody just feels good. So the trick now is to put it together, you know, where we can put, you know, string 3, 4, 5 games like that in a row and really get some momentum, and that's what we're shooting for.
Steve, most important question I've ever asked you: who's in charge of shaving Iguodala's head?
I certainly hope that would be Andre.
I would hope so too. But if you think about it, I mean, it feels like a pregame ceremony that you guys could start implementing. Let lock in, shave Iguodala, and then go play.
I like it. I hear there's a barbershop at the Chase Center, honestly. I heard that. I don't know if it's true or not.
I heard that, too. That there's going to be a barbershop in there. Anything special go down for Steph Curry's birthday?
Yeah, we had a great day. That's all I'm going to tell you. I'm not at liberty to tell you exactly what he did. I'm just going to say he had a fantastic day.
Have you played the jingle for him yet?
First name Stephen, last name Curry. He came into my life, now everything is less blurry.
Little pregame Curry jingle?
Probably. We'll probably do that tomorrow night. Get him really fired up.
I mean, how could you lose if you do that? Steve, thank you very, very much. Always good to talk to you. Have you left Houston yet? Are you in OKC? I think you stayed an extra day to practice, right?
Yeah, we are in OKC now. We've got a team dinner tonight. Just trying to get some rest, relax, and be ready to play tomorrow.
Enjoy yourself, man. Selection Sunday coming up. Brackets ready to go. We'll talk about that next week.
Thanks, Damon. See you, Matt.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. Always fantastic. Team dinner tonight? I wonder if they'll go to the space that used to have Kevin Durant's old restaurant in it. Probably not. I
have been to Oklahoma City on a couple of occasions while driving cross-country, and I could recommend a restaurant if they'd like called the Cattleman's Steakhouse.
I've heard of that, too.
Yeah, and that's a heck of a place.
That's the big Oklahoma Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm.
They do big steaks in Oklahoma.
Yeah, they do. It is delicious meat.
Nice.
Thank you.
Nice. So,
sounds good.
If you love delicious meat, we're the show for you. We've got a lot of meat that we're serving up today. Red meat, cold cuts. Anything you want to order from the deli comes up into the tweets. And I'm going to tell you, the segment only works if you get as excited as we are about it. Use the hashtag to the tweets that is numeral to the tweets that is two, as in number one. Is it the number that's in between one and three? Use that. Don't write T-O. Don't write T-O-O. Don't write T-W-O. Numeral. Hashtag numeral two, the tweets. Put it there. And when we come on back, we are going to be all over this. And we're hoping you have a really good time with it. Like I said, you're the key ingredient. Let's see how key you want to be today. It's a Friday afternoon, the Friday before we get ourselves Warriors Thunder tomorrow. That sounds awfully good to me. Selection Sunday coming up on Sunday. That is usually fun for me. It'll probably be painful this time around, but I'm ready to do it. I'm ready to go. I'm actually prepared now for Indiana to just disappoint me in March. How the mighty have fallen. But I need you to fall in line just a little. Conform, if you will. Use the Twitter for good. Hashtag numeral to the tweets with Matt Kolsky and Gianna Franco. We're doing that next. Right now, Gianna's got you all set to go with an update.
Not everyone has time to make a phone call, but everyone has time to tweet. Tweet at Damon Bruce right now. It's taking it to the tweets. Tweets. Now, here's Damon.
All right, I don't think I've explained to any of you how this one works. You got to fire up those thumbs, get yourself to the Twitter machines, and use the hashtag to the tweets. We'll begin with Ninis Love. At Ninis Love says, Damon, why does Steve Kerr say fan disrespect of players is not the norm in the NBA, while NBA players like Kyrie, Draymond, Jazz players, Thunder players, etc. are saying it happens all the time? Where's the discrepancy in that? Fantastic question. Normally we deal with the absurd here. I'm going to say an answer that's not going to be very popular with the younger crowd, but it's the truth. Steve Kerr comes from a generation with thick skin that America will never see again. You know, I mean, that's really it. Steve Kerr comes from the era where you had to be tougher to cut it in the NBA. Mentally, physically, nastier, tougher. And I just think that things that make modern players' ears bleed are things that roll off Steve's back no problem at all. And I'm not saying that there's a racial element there or anything. I think Steve is a sensitive enough guy and astute enough to where if there really was a problem, he would have shared that with us. But he thinks I guarantee you that these players are halfway soft most of the time.
I think I disagree on some levels. I think you had to be much tougher physically on the court in Steve Kerr's time. I think that's definitely true. I think people have always gone to sporting events and said foul stuff, and Steve Kerr's own college career is a great example of that. But I do think people are more emboldened in trollishness by the way the internet works in our modern world, and I do think you occasionally get people feeling more bold about what they might say to an athlete today than maybe 20 years ago. And here's the other thing. I do think guys like Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green in particular, and I don't think either of them is particularly thin-skinned, certainly not Draymond. I think they're the sort of dudes that, because they're big personalities and play with a certain edge, are more likely to draw nasty things from fans than someone like Steve Kerr.
Fans have more access. That plays a lot into it.
Well, I just think that Steve says, look, he's there an awful lot of the time. Now, maybe because where he is, they don't get it right behind the bench. It happens somewhere. But anyways, I'm going to go with Steve on this. And I'm going to say I've been to many, many, many NBA games. And the amount of times I've ever seen a fan needed to be disciplined or required to be removed from the game, it's so infinitesimal. I mean, I've hardly ever seen it in my entire life.
Yeah,
but for one or two moments and instances, we magnify negativity to the point where you'd think that it would be the baseline of how normal was.
But I don't think there's a lot of guys responding that way, right? So I just mean in terms of thin-skinnedness, I think what that guy said to Russell Westbrook in all likelihood was deeply foul and he deserved to be tossed. And you don't see that many players react that strongly.
Right. Also, Steve Kerr never played with a single person who said they needed a safe space. He now coaches a locker room full of them.
Times have changed.
This is from Sam Freed Entertainment. Hey, Damon, Gianna, and Matt, what are your guys' favorite kind of sandwiches?
Oh, this is great.
You know, obviously, got to give a shout-out to Ike's, and you should try the Damon Bruce. I'm delicious. But it's the honest to God's truth. The number one sandwich of all time in my mind still is the Reuben. It's unstoppable.
That's a goodie.
I love a Reuben.
I can't believe this is the worst thing I could do, but you're right.
The Reuben.
Yeah.
It's unstoppable. But that's okay. You are among the people who can say these things.
I'm a sandwich connoisseur, truly. I love a sandwich. I love almost nothing more than a sandwich. And I have lots of sandwich opinions. But all I can tell you is that if I walk into a restaurant at which I have never eaten and there is a Reuben on the menu, I am ordering that Reuben.
You're in.
Monte Cristo, my favorite.
Oh, that's
Monte
a great
Cristo
sandwich.
Is my favorite sandwich.
The breakfast sandwich.
The breakfast of champions sandwich,
if you will.
Yeah, it's delicious.
I do love breakfast sandwiches, too. Mm-hmm. I really do.
But French toast is bread. I mean, how do you beat that? You know what? The Monte Cristo is a great answer, too. You guys have good sandwich taste.
You're welcome. I miss eating sandwiches because you can't have sandwich meat while you're pregnant. So
that's tough.
I miss out. I do. I crave that. And I just can't. That's kind of a bummer.
Now, do you go thin shaved sandwich meat ideally? Because that's the key in my mind. You go to the deli counter, you get ultra thin.
You don't want it
shaved.
Too thick.
You don't
yes.
want thick
yeah.
shaved.
No, and it should be a hearty yet delicate
yes.
texture.
There
absolutely.
You go.
Here we go.
Delicate texture.
All right. Taking it a step further. All three of you guys, this is from Goose. What's your guilty pleasure?
Ooh.
What is your guilty pleasure? I'll tell you right now, my wife's guilty pleasure is anything Bravo produces.
Real Housewives.
My wife would leave me for Andy Cohn. No doubt.
I kind of love him, too. You know what? The Masked Singer on Fox was kind of our guilty pleasure recently.
Really?
With the celebrities. I mean, they're all B-listers,
too. I don't want to just angle you into a TV show. That's not what this question was about.
So I'll go ABBA for music.
Oof. Puke.
Love ABBA. And then I'll say... Lime popsicles, because I obsess over those, and then the Masked Singer. Those are my guilty pleasures.
My guilty pleasure is Hall & Oates.
Oh, that's great.
Not a guilty
that's
pleasure.
Not guilty, though. You should be proud of that
yeah,
love.
Embrace it.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I feel good. I'm glad we're all on the same page.
We could do the last 24 minutes of just a list of my guilty pleasures, but if I want to embarrass myself the most I possibly can with one answer, Gossip Girl is one of my top four TV shows of all time.
Wow.
That's
gossip
awesome.
Girl. What's the gossip? Who's the girl?
It's just a bunch of attractive fake high school
yeah,
students
high schoolers
doing ridiculous
going to college.
Things in New York.
Yeah. yeah. Blake Lively. That's kind of how she got her
Blake
start.
Blake Lively and Leighton Meester, the lady stars of the show. Penn Badgley.
Look at you, Kolsky.
My abilities to rewatch old episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 Ooh. Has to be filed somewhere under guilty pleasure.
See, that's a similar vein. Like,
as
Gossip
well.
Girl is my Beverly Hills 90210.
Hey, do both of you guys sleep with Kyle and Jimmy, or do you split time between their houses? That is from Jason, who is clearly a Raiders fan who can't get the taste of Mark Davis out of his mouth and would follow him anywhere. This is Michelle, our friend Michelle Haberman,
Michelle.
Who says, hey, Damon, Gianna, Matt, what are your favorite St. Paddy Day drinks? It's real simple. If you're not drinking...
It's just a straight whiskey.
Yeah, it's whiskey. Whiskey. It doesn't even need to be Irish whiskey, but just whiskey. I don't need to dress up my drink to enjoy it. I don't need to put a costume on to go get a drink.
No.
I don't need a holiday to be declared. I don't need a national drinking moment to want to go have a little drinky poo. So,
if anything, I'm less inclined to drink heavily on St. Patrick's Day than any other day because amateur hour.
What's a green cocktail? Is there an actual green?
They're all
cocktail?
Disgusting.
A grasshopper.
Okay, I'll pick a grasshopper.
Every one of them is foul.
Or you could drink a an apple teeny.
Apple teeny.
Something
there you
like
go.
That.
There you
Ugh.
Go.
Or something with creme de menthe. Puke.
Don't do that. Don't do that. This is from Peter James. Hey, D. Bruce, how do I hook up with as many IG models as Clay? You don't. That's how you do. You don't.
I mean, be a very attractive, very
successful
very
NBA
wealthy NBA player
athlete,
would be a start.
Actor.
Even then, you're going to struggle.
Yeah. And so, in other words, you don't.
That's right.
you really, really don't.
Well, way to be ambitious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aim high, man.
Go for it.
Hey, Damon, what are the best post-game restaurants in San Francisco after a Warriors game? What do you mean, like now or when they move to Chase Center? Because Chase Center is going to change that neighborhood so much so. I mean, it's going to be a gargantuan cultural shift down there. So I don't even know if I can recommend one to you now, but like you need late night bites in San Francisco. They're harder and harder to find. More restaurants are closing early. They really do.
My biggest complaint about Bay Area living is late night food.
There's not a lot of options.
There's not a lot of great options.
Yeah,
that's the spot where Chicago and New York really have the edge on the Bay Area. And I'm not one who likes to give New York a lot of credit, but you can eat anything you want any time of the night, and that is nice.
That's a good point.
It just, the whole world is still open at 3 a.m. in New York City. That is very, very nice. Did you know that they did a vote here, you know, to extend bar hours, and we voted no?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's a bit of a disappointment, but it doesn't surprise me.
Interesting.
This is, what do we got here? What do we got? Hey, Damon, this is from Mark. What does my net worth have to be to get Warrior season tickets at Chase Center? Well, Mark, just a little bit more than they cost you right now. I mean, you got a 93-mile-an-hour financial fastball if you're a season ticket holder right now of the Golden State Warriors. You know, the Chase Center crowd doesn't need Chase Center to open for it to already be in the building. It's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the truth. Warriors games have changed a little bit in terms of just who is in there, who is frequently the most in there. I mean, this is a big ticket item, and it's going to get even bigger. There's no doubt about it. But you, if you can afford season tickets at Chase Center, you don't have to ask this question.
That's right, and that's the problem. That's the natural consequence of getting good. Unfortunately, you don't get both things. You don't get a good team that's affordable and easy
and
to go see.
Tickets.
That's life in America, unfortunately. Nothing that everyone wants to do is cheap.
This is from Derek, who asked maybe the most poignant and important question to answer. Is it okay to wear my Warriors jersey if I'm over 30 and it's not a game day?
Yes.
What's the setting, though?
Yeah, it depends.
What's the setting?
Like at a birthday
party? Breakers.
Beta Breakers?
Yeah.
Do people even wear clothes at Beta Breakers right here?
Far too many don't. I'll tell you that much.
Does it matter where you rep your jersey? I don't understand why guys are so funny about that.
No, you get a certain age and you kind of got to lay it down just a little unless it calls for it because you're in the environment. Like there's never a wrong time to wear the jersey of the team that you're supporting in person at the sporting event.
Okay.
You can be a 70-year-old man wearing a Niners jersey at a Niners game. There's nothing wrong with that.
Even on your couch, right? During the game.
Yes, but you can't be a 70-year-old man puttering around the mall on a Tuesday in a Niners jersey.
Why? It's just a shirt.
It's a tough look.
It's got a little element of like grow up.
But you pay
really
so
does.
Much money for that jersey. Why don't you want to wear it as much as you can?
Here's what I would say. You can wear your – it's especially basketball. Football jersey you get away with a little more. It's more of a shirt.
Right.
A basketball jersey –
you get armpit fat? Armpit fat. How's your armpit fat?
A basketball jersey you can wear at or during the event or anywhere you'd feel comfortable wearing your pajamas.
How about this?
Really?
Unless you're yoked, you have to have an undershirt on under the jersey. You can't just be au natural from the waist up. I'm so glad we were able to get into this.
Hey, there's a lot to break down here.
Muy importante.
Couple of calls and one more segment before we tip our cap and say goodbye. You're on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
All right. So it's rare a really, really good text comes in this late in the show, but Kolsky, I think you stumbled on one asking about the when can a man wear a jersey, and there are an awful lot of different reasons and examples of why you can, can't. This guy's got a really good rule that if every man implemented it, you'd probably be safe. Go ahead.
Yeah, my rule, says the 650 texter, is that it's okay to wear one from a player who is older than you are. He says, I'm 57 and I'd wear my McCovey jersey anywhere, but you'll never catch me dead in a Posey jersey.
Oh.
That's solid.
That's all a solid rule. It's a nice rule of thumb.
There's another part of me, too, and I don't know why I feel this way. If the player, it depends on who the player is. I don't like wearing another man's name on my back. That's why I prefer, like, I have this old Cubs jersey, and the Cubs didn't have their name on their back, so it's my Mark Grace jersey, but it doesn't say Grace. You know what I mean?
I gotcha. Okay.
I don't like wearing another man's name on my back.
You prefer it nameless?
Yes.
And I can see that.
I took the DIY approach and just tore the McNown off the back of my number 8 Bears jersey.
I think a lot of people actually did that, yeah, though. You're, that doesn't mean you're all alone.
Yeah.
How much should I be betting on the Warriors and Thunder tomorrow night? Well, I don't know how much you should be betting, but you should definitely take this into account when we ask Steve Kerr about Kevin Durant.
I would say it's doubtful. He's officially questionable, so I guess that's the word I should use. I'm downgrading him to doubtful. I just think that a couple of extra days makes too much sense, especially, you know, at this stage of the season. If this were a playoff game, for sure he'd be playing. We want to be extra cautious, so I'm guessing San Antonio will be his first game back, but we'll see how he feels tomorrow. It's up to him and to Rick tomorrow after shoot-around.
I think the head coach just told you to lay off on that bet tomorrow, right now anyways. Let's quickly go to D'Angelo in Berkeley. D'Angelo, make it quick for me, man. What do you got?
What's up, man? I just want to talk about the 49ers and how, to me, on offense, they're doing a terrible job. They're hiring taxi cab drivers like Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews, Goodwin, and Pettis combined have 5,860 yards combined. That's 384 more yards than Odell Beckham, man. He just did all that by himself. Got 5,400 yards receiving. Look, man, all this high character and low character stuff, but get the guy who's going to ball. If you are balling, I don't care about his attitude, man. Antonio Brown's attitude might be terrible, but he balls on the field. So let the man have a bad attitude if you want to win. Like, you want to win or not? What you want to do?
D'Angelo, I co-sign everything you just said. Well done. Thank you very much for the call.
Yeah, hard to disagree with any of that.
As long as you're not committing crimes that put people in jeopardy or hurt society, I don't care what you do if you help us win.
It's important to draw a big, fat, red line between the alleged problems of Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham and, like, actual real bad stuff that some people in this league actually do. These guys are alleged locker room problems, not human problems.
I wish we had time for one more, but we really don't, because we've got to tip our cap and say some thank yous and goodbye. If you were on hold and didn't get in, let this be a lesson. Call earlier in the show when we get back on Monday next week. By the way, Monday and Tuesday next week, thanks to the Warriors out on the road, I'll be on with Bonte before just doing a little quick kiss of a 25-minute show. I believe you're going to be slipping on back on Wednesday, Thursday next
Indeed,
week.
Indeed,
so
I will.
We'll see you again then. And you know what? Fun week. Good job. Really had a lot of fun this week. Gianna.
Damn it.
Thank you as always. We want to thank Brian Baldinger, Steve Kerr, the legend, Frank Gore, and everyone who weighed in on a little To the Tweets. Thank you very, very much. Want to invite you to stay tuned because Ryan Covey, Michael Urban are coming up next to take you deep into your Friday night. Albie and Elena, merci beaucoup. C'est si bon. Thank you all for listening. Fun week. Lots of stuff. Looking forward to next week as well. Have yourself a good weekend. Remember, make smart choices. A lot of drinkers out there. Make smart choices. Do not drink and drive. Call an Uber. Call a taxi. I don't care if you take a taxi to Los Angeles. That'll be cheaper than the court case that could come against you if you get behind the wheel of a car. You know what I mean? So just make good choices. Go Warriors. Enjoy Selection Sunday. I probably won't. And on that note, sports don't build character. Oh, my Hoosiers. They reveal it.
And like that, he's gone. Gone.
Wow. Okay. I like it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.